Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Ladies, we've got a show for you tonight. Now, are you in a bad marriage? Are you thinking about divorce? Have you started your divorce process and discovered that your attorney is truly not on your side? Well, this is the show for you because we're going to be talking all about divorce hackers. Okay. My guest tonight, Amy E. Grant. She's an attorney in Manhattan Beach and California, and we're going to be talking about her book, The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot, What Every Woman Needs to Know About Finances, Child Custody, Lawyers, and Planning Ahead. And ladies, this book truly is for you. This woman knows her stuff. Okay, and that'll come across very evidently as we get into the interview. So get pen and paper, take notes, and then after you take notes and listen to the show, go get the book. Okay, it's available on Amazon, and it's definitely going to help you. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But the real question is, are you truly ready to? By the way, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Money Money Book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. Now, my clients say that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence, but they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. Find out more about me and the services I offer. Go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter. You can sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, and again, that's from my website, MoniqueChapman.com. My guest today, Anne E. Grant, J.D., began her career as a corporate litigator specializing in unfair business practices and consumer fraud. After her own divorce, she created her own firm focusing on family law and a holistic approach to this life transition. She works in Manhattan Beach, and her website is thedivorcehacker.com. Again, that's thedivorcehacker.com. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you so much, Monique. I'm happy to be here today.
I am so glad that you're here. You know, the very first sentence in your book caught me, or at least the first sentence I opened it to, and it says, as soon as your marriage is in trouble, take steps to protect yourself. Why that early?
Well, I actually think even before you think your marriage is in trouble, I think all women should take steps to make certain that they are protected, and that's because we never know what's going to happen, what a new day will bring. And in my own experience, even though I was a corporate litigator, when I went through my divorce, there were many areas in which I was unprepared. And so the reason I wrote the book, and particularly this particular advice, is so that women don't have to go through some of the things that I experienced and some of my clients experience if they're not prepared. So I provide action items to help women take control of their finances and get their financial house in order in case they are surprised.
Okay. And, you know, a lot of women are surprised because some women, you know, I'm an older lady, and back in my day, you know, you got married, you stayed married, if you know, and you suffered through whatever, but if you were brave enough to get a divorce, it usually meant that your lifestyle diminished completely while the spouses, you know, moved on and flourished. But based on the information that I read in your book, The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot, what every woman needs to know about finances, child custodies, and lawyers and planning ahead, that's not the case today, that women can have a very full life after deciding to end the relationship.
You're so right about that. So the conventional wisdom, as you just mentioned, was that if you divorced, you were going to be broke, unhappy, and sexless, and your children were going to be permanently messed up. Social scientists had us convinced that marriage was the path to happiness and raising successful children. And as a result, many women spent their lives in unhappy marriages, convinced that if they untied the knot, they were in for disaster. But newly released studies have debunked this marriage mythology. And in fact, the evidence shows that divorced women are finding their lives are often happier, healthier, and more fulfilling than those of their married counterparts. And they're learning that they can raise happy, healthy, successful children on their own.
Okay. Well, you know, divorce today is almost what I call rampant. I mean, there's 2,400 divorces each day, 16,000 plus each week, and over 800,000 a year just here in the United States. Why is it that there is so much divorce? Is it that we don't take the time to nurture the relationship before marriage and during the marriage?
I think there's lots of reasons. I think we live in a time where it's almost a perfect storm of circumstances that have arisen to create, I guess, what you could call an epidemic. It's interesting because the statistics show actually that the divorce rate overall is going down, which is probably because a lot of millennials are no longer getting married. But the divorce rate in the United States for people 50 and older has actually doubled since 1990. Oh. And as the American population steadily ages, what we call gray divorces will keep rising. And it's anticipated that by the year 2030, it's estimated that 800,000 of these, what we call gray divorces, will occur annually.
Wow. Well, let's talk a moment about gray divorces. And hang in there, young ladies, because I'm going to get to you, too. But say, you know, your husband's retired, you're retired, and, you know, you look at him one day and you go, like, no, this just isn't working for me anymore. You're abusive, you're this, you're that, you're the other. How can a woman who has, you know, retired, maybe living off of Social Security and her husband's pension, how does she get on with life and you know, still have, you know, finances and be able to take care of herself, especially if the bulk of the money and the insurance or whatever is coming from the male spouse?
So something that women need to recognize and that I hear a lot is they'll come into my office and they'll talk about their husband's pension and his 401k in the situation. Mm-hmm. But what women need to understand is that anything earned or acquired during marriage in a community property state like California is split 50-50. So it's your pension also. It's also your 401k. The same is true for your earnings. If you have a 401k that you earn from your work, your spouse will have a 50% interest in whatever portion of it was earned during the marriage. In those instances that you just described where the parties are retirement age, we really look carefully at those kinds of things. And if they own a house, the equity that's accrued in the house. Mm-hmm. And then women need to understand that it's never too late to have a fresh start. I actually learned this myself. I got divorced during the recession, and my law firm, where I was a partner, dissolved. And I had three kids. During that time period, my father, who was really helping out a lot because I was trying to get things jump-started, he passed away unexpectedly. So I really had to dig deep and start over completely. That's when I started my own practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I provide a lot of tips in my book about this, about business issues and how to jumpstart your career or start a new business. There's a whole section in each chapter of the book about that and how you can take whatever skills you have and apply them to our new economy. There's so many opportunities now that we're all electronically connected, mm-hmm. to do work and to do it in a way that suits you. For me, my kids were still relatively young, and so I worked from home for a period of time and had the ability to do that because things like the legal resources that used to require a floor of a large office building to hold, I could have, you know, access to them on my cell phone, on my smartphone. So there are many opportunities to earn that I think with some ingenuity and thoughtfulness, we can start anew at any age.
Okay. And thank you for sharing that, because there are so many women, especially the older ladies, you know, they feel stuck, they feel trapped and not being able to see a way clear. And perhaps they're not as savvy with technology as, you know, someone who's a little bit younger, so they feel afraid. So thank you for sharing, because they need to get that information out. Okay, so let's jump right into this. In your book, you talk about women contemplating divorce if they've been a stay-at-home mom to find some type of employment. Why is that important?
Well, I think it's important for a couple reasons. You mentioned in just a moment ago about being afraid, and I think that is the number one thing that stops women from moving forward in this situation. You know, when you're fearful, you either go into flight, fight, or freeze. And I see a lot of women freeze up from fear. Uh-huh. And I think it's either because, you know, they fall into the first category we were talking about, which is maybe they've been out, they're older and they've been out of the workforce for a while and they feel intimidated by all the changes that have occurred. Or they're stay-at-home moms, and the same issue. You know, maybe they've been raising children, and they have that same concern. And what I found is, for myself and for the women that I work with, once they start working and earning, it really improves their confidence in their ability to move forward. And like I said, my law firm had dissolved, and I was staying home with the kids when I went through my divorce, and it was during the recession, and it was kind of an impossible time to find a job, so I just created my own. I opened my own office, and it took a lot of guts to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think I include a section in each chapter of the book about mindfulness, and the reason I do that is to help overcome the fear, because I experienced that myself. You know, it was really terrifying to be in that situation, and I recognize that. Mm-hmm. So the mindfulness section is not just a throwaway section. It's really the foundation of my practice,
mm-hmm.
and the book, because when I went through what I did, you know, my coping skills that had served me were inadequate to deal with the loss I was experiencing. I was just overcome by it. And so through my meditation practice, which I talk about at length, and I strongly encourage women to have something like that, that really helped me be grounded each day so that I could deal with the things that needed to be dealt with and stay calm and focused. Because, you know, there's just... my inspiration for writing the book was simply that I was sitting at lunch one day thinking, you know, and even though I was a lawyer, I was thinking, there's no real guide out there about how to get through this. Like the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting, which is written for women going through a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I realized we really needed a guide like that. Most women were either talking to their friends or relatives, but your Aunt Martha, who got divorced in Chicago in 1983, is not the best resource for advice about what to do in today's world if you're going through a divorce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I did that. I wrote the book with that in mind, that we really needed a roadmap to walk us through what we need to do in all those areas, not just legal, but financial, with our children, with respect to our work and our career, our homes, and then, as I said, the mindfulness piece to keep us grounded.
And each part, folks, that she has just talked about is very well explained in the book, and it's especially the mindfulness. It's important because when you're going through a major life change, you know, you get out of sync with yourself. You know, sometimes you think you're nuts, sometimes you think you're sane, or anything in between. And the mindfulness will help you bring you back to the present so that you can move forward. Now, Ann, let's walk through the steps that women should take before getting divorced. We talked about, you know, as soon as you realize your marriage is in trouble, to, you know, take those steps to protect yourself. So can you walk us through a few of those?
I'd be happy to. So okay. I recommend that you open a bank account in your name. It's important to have an account and set aside money for living expenses and in case you need to hire an attorney. So, for example, I had a gal who was married to one of the assistant head coaches of one of Los Angeles's professional sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at an away game, or so she thought, and she was out with the kids having dinner. But he came back early. He stole the teenage son's Jeep. He filled it with his belongings. And then he completely emptied the joint bank account, leaving $238 in the account.
Oh,
and
wow.
he texted her and said he did it so that she couldn't hire a lawyer. And this is not an isolated incident. I see things like this happen more often than I'd like.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we were able to go to court and get things squared away, but not without her being completely panic-stricken.
So I recommend
that all women set aside some money just in case. I mean, you never know what could happen. Sometimes people lose their lives in accidents, and it takes a while to get things sorted out. So it's just a good idea. And then secure your assets. It's much easier to return items than it is to try to locate them once they've disappeared. I've seen valuable wine collections disappear, coin collections go missing, and money evaporate. So take steps to protect what is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then I recommend that you have two credit cards in your own name. You need to be the primary cardholder on at least two credit cards if possible. Because mm-hmm. you can have a wallet full of credit cards. But if your husband's the primary cardholder and you're the secondary, he can cancel those cards without your permission.
Mm-hmm.
And then gather and copy documentation for all assets, bank accounts, investments, and retirement plans, even if they are in your spouse's name. So copy anything with a dollar sign attached to it.
Okay.
And that way, in the event of, you know, God forbid, even like a fire like we've been having up and down the state of California, you will have the necessary documentation at your disposal to take care of yourself.
But let me interrupt you for a second and ask a question. What if, and what you said is, you know, great information, but what if you live with this control freak where you really don't have access to his money or your money, I guess, or anything else? How does a woman get around that when this man is so controlling that he won't let her have more than $5 for the family budget to, you know, over $5, I should say, for the family budget to do what's necessary for the family? So there's no way that she feels that she can put money aside beforehand.
Well, that's a big problem. I mean, if you're in that situation, I mean, I would find that intolerable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess, you know, we all have a different tolerance level, and some people are accustomed to that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is where communication is important, and I think if you're living with someone in that situation You probably need to go to counseling and see whether communication channels can be opened so that there can be a more fulsome exchange of information about finances, because you really need to be a partner in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the steps that I've suggested you take really come down to understanding where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually should lead to a better marriage. I have found that, and the studies have revealed that, most marriages don't end because of sexual infidelity. They end because of financial problems.
Yeah.
And when people walk through my door, typically, often there's been extramarital relationships, but the reason they come in is because I refer to it as financial infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
They found out that money's been moved around without, in a secretive way,
mm-hmm.
or spent on the girlfriend, or money's disappearing. And so I think it's really important to know and understand what's going on with the finances, and that should be something that a couple is doing in a marriage in order for it to thrive. And it's sort of a red flag if you're not doing that.
Okay. Now, what if there's a situation you'd mentioned earlier, the sports, person, and how, they did that horrible thing to their spouse. But what if there's a situation where, a woman's married to a man of means, he owns his own company, the company is thriving, he gets a wonderful salary, five-figure a month salary, and then he gets bonuses and then perks like stock and everything on top of that. So say you know about the salary, and that there's bonuses coming periodically. Would you be entitled to the bonus? And then if there's stocks coming that you not necessarily know about, would you be entitled to part of that?
Yes, indeed. So anything earned or acquired during marriage in California is community property. And there are also similar rules in non-community property states or equitable property states.
Mm-hmm.
And so absolutely, this comes up all the time. The bonus is part of the income, and there's particular ways that it is calculated, because sometimes you don't know what that bonus amount is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely included in income for purposes of calculating child support and spousal support. And the same with the stocks. The stocks are also, if it's earned during the marriage, then there is a marital property interest, community property, or equitable property interest in the stocks as well. So it's really important with these high earners, often we'll get a forensic accountant involved to help with the analysis if there's complicated fee-sharing arrangements or bonus distributions, and they can help in the analysis of the gross cash flow that's available for support, which is what judges and attorneys look at when figuring out things like spousal support and child support.
Okay, would the forensic accountant be able to trace money that has maybe been taken out of one retirement account and put someplace offshore?
Yes, so if money has been removed, that's one of the things that a forensic accountant does. They engage in what's called tracing. And the other thing that's done is lawyers can conduct discovery, and discovery can consist of asking for documents, issuing subpoenas, propounding or serving interrogatories. That's just a fancy name for written questions. All are ways to trace and locate money that's been moved around.
Okay. So, ladies, don't be afraid. Okay. Don't
right.
be afraid. Go after
yeah.
it.
Right, right. It's really important because a lot of women I've found are afraid to go after their fair share because they don't want to anger their spouse. And the other thing that I see a lot that is quite frustrating is women going through divorce, often in these situations I find where there's a high wage earner on the other side, they don't want to, and the husband has been calling the shots,
mm-hmm.
they don't want to upset him. and they're following, and they also are following his advice even during the divorce with respect to how to divide things up. And I talk about this in the book. It's really a hard thing to recognize, but once you head down this path, unless you're married to someone who's incredibly enlightened, and there are a few of those guys out there, but a lot of them, they're just not looking out for your, they're not putting you first any longer, you or your best interest. And sadly, if you're married to a narcissist, this is even true with respect to the children. I've seen this happen. And so it's really important to find a good lawyer and then listen to their advice. Follow their advice and don't follow the advice that your spouse may continue to give you about the finances, but rather follow the advice of the professionals that you've hired and let them do their job.
Well, you know, that leads me to a question. What if you've hired someone that you feel is professional, or if they're, you know, a friend referred them or whatever, and you're in the middle of divorce, let's say you spent like $30,000 to $40,000, and all of a sudden the lawyer is saying, nope, you can't ask for this, you can't ask for that, you can't ask for the other, and some of it would be some of the things that you just talked about. How do you either recover from that or get rid of that attorney to get a new one, especially if money is getting shorter by the moment because you're shelling out so much to an attorney who doesn't have your best interest at heart?
Well, you'll see in the book, I've included a whole section about how to find a good lawyer. And I think it's really important to be informed about this, because sadly, there are some questionable lawyers practicing family law. And I can say that because I came from the outside. I started in the corporate world where I practiced for over 10 years before I began doing this work. And I was astounded at some of what I experienced, where since the client is not an attorney, and that's why I wrote the book, is so that women could be more knowledgeable, because they can really, they're vulnerable and can be taken advantage of. And so included in the book are the top 10 questions to ask your divorce attorney in the initial interview. And I've also created an app implementing the tools in the book, the Divorce Hacker app, because I know that when you go to that first interview, you may be nervous, and you can open the app, and there are the questions that you can ask. So I suggest that you ask, for example, how long have you been practicing, and what percentage of your practice is devoted to family law? It's important to have an attorney who's experienced in family law. In this era of specialization, it's impossible to do everything well. So you want someone who's been doing this for a while. And then you want to find out if your interests are aligned, because you do not want to find yourself $40,000 in and realize, oh, this lawyer isn't a good match. That we want to avoid that. So you want to find out, you know, whether the attorney that you're hiring is going to be actually working on your case and how involved he or she will be personally, so that, you know, when you call, you want to know that you're going to get a return phone call from that person within a reasonable period of time. You'd be amazed at how many women come and hire me just because their lawyer is not responsive. They're not answering their emails, their phone calls. And in my office, we always do that within 24 hours. Even if I'm in court and I'm unavailable, my assistant will get back to the client and let them know and see if there's something she can do to help them. And then you want to know what their hourly rates are and how you will be billed. Hourly rates can vary from anywhere from $200 an hour to $1,200 an hour. And just because an attorney charges for more doesn't mean that they're necessarily better. It just means that they charge more. So it's very important to know how you're going to be billed so that you're not surprised. And then, of course, you're going to want to know how long your divorce is going to take and how much it's going to cost. And the answer to that is often, it depends. And that's actually not not a bad answer, because it does depend. A lot of it depends on how complicated your case is and how litigious your spouse is. But it's really important then to ask the follow-up question, which is, how long do most of your cases take? And if the answer to that is 5 years, run. Because it's my belief that if you can create a human in 9 months, you ought to be able to get divorced in that amount of time or less. So most divorces will take up to a year, but if you're interviewing someone and most of their cases take a lot longer than that, then you need to reconsider who you're interviewing with.
Okay. So, Anne, you're saying even a high-conflict divorce could be resolved within 9 months?
No. Well, a high-conflict divorce probably is going to take longer. But, you know, most divorces are not that complex. And what I have found is that some attorneys will actually stir the pot and increase the acrimony because, let's face it, they bill by the hour. So the longer a case goes on, the longer they're going to get paid. And that's the abuse that I do see within this profession that you have to be very cautious of. So you need to, again, in my book, I explain what you should expect and the areas where you should question what your lawyer is doing. So for example, in a divorce, you exchange financial disclosures with your spouse. They're not served on the court or filed with the court, but they're served on the other party. And so most of the documentation, if not all of it, concerning your assets and your income and your expenditures should be informally exchanged. And in some cases, for example, we talked about the tracing cases, if money's been moved, you may have to conduct discovery, but not in every case. Discovery is expensive. So before your lawyer starts sending out interrogatories and subpoenas, you need to be very clear about why they're doing that and whether it actually needs to be done or if there's a less expensive way to go about it. Because a lot of that information can be obtained informally in most divorces, and that will save you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Folks, we're speaking with Anne E. Grant, J.D. She is the author of The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot, What Every Woman Needs to Know About Finances, Child Custody, Lawyers, and Financial Planning. The book is available just about every place on Amazon, and on Amazon it was the number one new release. This book, ladies, if you're contemplating a divorce, get it and read it. If you're in the middle of a divorce, get it, read it. If you're unhappy with your current divorce attorney, get it and read it, because things that you may have overlooked on purpose, inadvertently, whatever, Anne is going to give you clear, concise answers in the book. And the book is really laid out in the area of around the months of the divorce as opposed to subject area. So what generally happens in month one, month two, month 19, whatever, if it has to go that long. So very clear information. I can't strongly push this enough. If you're in this situation, please arm yourself with credible information, and Anne Grant provides you credible information. And you can check her out on her website, and that is thedivorcehacker.com. Again, that's thedivorcehacker.com. And if you want some more information on her and what she does, you can go to AnneGrantLaw.com. Both sites will give you a huge amount of information that's going to help set your mind at ease as you go through this process. That's not always the easiest, but it's going to help you get through it. Now, Anne, I've got a question for you. Let's say that, you know, you've decided that you're done with this guy and you're moving on. And say in the past he's physically hurt you. Okay, I mean physical abuse, and for whatever reason, you know, you stayed and went through the physical abuse. And you have injuries because of your physical abuse that need to be corrected surgically. Is that something that you can hold the spouse to if there's been documentation with the doctors of this physical abuse as a result of what the hubby, in most cases, did to you?
Absolutely. It's absolutely critical that it's documented and it's presented. So if you've been physically abused, first of all, if you feel that you're in imminent harm of abuse, you need to seek immediate help from an attorney. They can file a domestic violence restraining order and take that seriously. And that's something that you can go in and get very quickly. The court is set up to accommodate that so that you're protected. So that's the number one thing to consider. And then with respect to past abuse, there is a presumption that if any person who is engaged in domestic violence, there's a presumption that they will not get spousal support. So I just recently was involved in a matter where the wife was actually accused of abusing the husband, mm-hmm. and it's significant for many reasons, but also because if it's established that indeed she did, she will then forfeit her claim for spousal support. But it works the other way as well. So if there is abuse, then there is a presumption that the children, that the abuser will not have custody of the children.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important that in those instances that that's brought to your attorney's attention, because it can have significant ramifications on custody, visitation, and support.
Okay. Now, you keep saying during our conversation, during the marriage. Does that include the separation portion before the divorce is final? Anything that's accrued, or is that just during the time that you were physically under the same roof?
So that's a good question. The date of separation is what you're asking about. And mm-hmm. The date of separation is a very important date. It's important because it impacts the division of assets and also how reimbursements are handled. So anything earned or acquired or any debt incurred after the date of separation is the party who earns it. It's their separate property or their separate debt.
Mm-hmm.
And so also where you have bonuses being distributed, I had a case where a bonus was distributed in May, at the end of May, and it fell, well, actually part of the bonus was earned prior to that, mm-hmm. and the date of separation was right in the middle of it. So the portion that was earned before the date of separation was community property, and then the portion of the bonus that was accrued after the date of separation would be separate property, separate earnings.
Okay.
And then in terms of how the date of separation is determined, it's when the parties declare their intention to end the marriage and act in accordance therewith. So it can be sort of a gray area. You can have a couple who's residing in the same home. They've decided to get divorced, and they're now sleeping in separate bedrooms. And
mm-hmm.
so they can be separated even though they're living under the same roof. Or certainly when someone moves out, that is most commonly deemed to be the date of separation. But you no longer have to move out and physically separate in the state of California in order to have a date of separation.
Okay. Well, let me ask you one more financial question that really it jarred me when I read it in the book, and then we'll move on to custody. In the book, you talk about tax laws that are coming up and everybody's concerned about, actually there's two questions, everybody's concerned about tax. So the first question is, how is the new tax law that's coming up in 2019 affecting people in the process of divorce now?
So the answer to that is that the new tax law that will go into effect on January 1st will have significant ramifications for divorcing women. Under the current law, spousal support, also called alimony, is deductible by the payor spouse. That means the breadwinner, often the man. And it's taxable to the recipient spouse, which is often the woman. But this is all going to change starting on January 1st. Spousal support will no longer be deductible or taxed. So it's somewhat counterintuitive, but the thinking is that this is going to hurt the recipient of spousal support because the payor will be inclined to pay less spousal support if it isn't deductible. And I am seeing that happen. A lot of people are really rushing right now to get their judgments entered before the end of the year.
Because of the new law. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Now, the second question around that is, you know, you've been married for whatever length of time, and you're getting the divorce, and, you know, throughout the marriage, the husband has handled the taxes and all of that. And you don't remember ever signing any tax forms. And he tells you that, oh, well, you know, it's an e-signature. You don't have to worry about it. Is that true? Do you actually have to sign a tax form, especially if you didn't have a window into what they were?
So these tax questions are complex, and it's really important that you assemble a team as you're working through your divorce. You need more than just a divorce lawyer. Most divorce lawyers are not tax specialists, mm-hmm. and they will suggest that you go meet with your accountant, and it's really important that you do so, so that you can get the tax advice that you need. And a lot of women will find that they want to have someone other than the person that's been doing the husband's taxes or their taxes. Mm-hmm. They'll want to get a new accountant. But that's a really good question. I know there are instances where there has been, I see this happen in cases where the husband owns his own business, and he may, for example, being really aggressive on the expenses that he's claiming for the business, mm-hmm. and the wife will say to me, look, I understand, you know, our accountant's been telling me how aggressive he is for years, and I don't even sign the tax return. So there are instances where it's called the innocent spouse, and you could claim that, you know, you were not involved in that. But in some cases, you know, where I have some women who come in and they're the secretary of the company, so they have some knowledge, you know, and they're an officer of the family business, they would be then held liable for whatever is represented on the taxes, even if they weren't heavily involved in the preparation of them. So it's really important to get your arms around that so you understand the consequences.
Okay, and is it possible to get copies of your back tax filings if you had nothing to do with it?
Absolutely. Yeah, the first place to start with is your accountant, and if you can't get them from the accountant, there are other ways to go about doing that.
Okay, great. Now, I want to switch gears and talk a bit about custody. It's always, you know, so heart-wrenching. You know, I think that's probably the worst part of going through a divorce if you have children, trying to figure out who has majority custody or if it's going to be 50-50 or whatever. What advice would you give to women around custody of the children?
I think it's really important that you, and this is one of those being prepared issues that I talk about, that you establish the routine that you want to have with your kids as far in advance of filing for divorce as you possibly can. So by way of example, I had a gal come into my office. She was the primary breadwinner in the family. The husband stayed home with their 4-year-old daughter. And she headed out to work early in the morning and got home fairly late at night and even had to travel on the weekends occasionally. And yet she wanted to be declared what she called the residential parent, which really isn't a term, except that what she meant by that is she wanted to have the majority of the custodial time with the child. And I explained to her, you know, there was no court in the state that was going to grant her that under the current circumstances. Mm-hmm. That if, you know, if she wanted whatever schedule she wanted with her daughter, she needed to implement before she filed. So she actually changed her work schedule so she could work from home one day and started traveling quite a bit less so uh-huh. that she could have more time. So you want to have that in place because courts tend to order the status quo. So, okay. And the reason for that is because they're supposed to always be looking at what is in the best interest of the children, mm-hmm. and continuity and stability is deemed to be in the child's best interest. So if you're the parent that, you know, is primarily responsible for child rearing and your spouse is heading off to work every morning, then it's most likely that that type of schedule is going to be enforced. But something else women should be aware of is that I am seeing more and more judges ordering 50-50 custody, especially if the parent that has not been as involved with the children, which quite often is the dad, if he shows a willingness to be more involved. So I have a case right now where one of the parents is a surgeon, and he has some flexibility with his schedule, and he has stated a desire to spend significantly more time with the party's three kids, and the judge is granting that request. So the old days where, you know, traditionally mom stayed home and dad went to work and courts would order dads could have every other weekend and one night a week, we're seeing less and less of that.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a follow-up question to that. Say you established 50-50 custody. However, dad has a position where he's traveling a lot, not just traveling within the United States. He's out of the country a lot. But, however, he doesn't want to give up his time, per se, with the kids because he's traveling. He wants, like say he's supposed to have a Monday to Thursday, just for sake of example, and he's gone Monday through Thursday. He's wanting to recoup that time from the soon-to-be ex-wife. Is that equitable, or should it be based on, okay, well, dad needs to travel X amount of time, so maybe he might have 25% custody and the wife have, or ex-wife would have 75%?
So this is a good question. I had a case like this where the husband was a professional photographer and traveled all over the world, and we ended up in front of a judge on this particular issue. Mm-hmm. And in that case, because we were in a courtroom, the judge ordered a set schedule, and he did give the dad some makeup time during the children's, like the time that they were off school for mm-hmm. holidays and such. The best way to handle these situations is to try to work it out, and really truly try to work it out. And what I do often is I'll refer clients who are really digging in their heels on these visitation issues to a experienced therapist who works with couples on co-parenting and who has training in that regard. And the reason for that is they can often get a lot further than the lawyers can, and it's also less expensive because therapists charge a lot less than attorneys do. So I have found that working with, and some people benefit from working with what's called a parenting plan coordinator. So they're like a co-parenting therapist, but they actually are given authority by the court to make orders. And that can be really effective and more effective than, you know, litigating this in a courtroom, because judges only have a very limited amount of time to deal with these issues. They usually spend like 10, 15 minutes on a case. They'll have like 25 cases on their calendar each day.
Oh, wow.
So if you're working with a therapist or a parenting plan coordinator, you can meet with them every week, and they can really get to know your schedule and your spouse's schedule and the children's needs, and then you can work on establishing a plan so that everybody's interests are taken into account.
Okay. Now, what happens if you're in this process and the guy has been demeaning and, you know, a real ogre through the relationship, extremely controlling, and then all of a sudden you're in the process of divorce and he's harassing you all the time, and you say, okay, well, just communicate with me via my attorney. But that can be expensive because, of course, you guys bill, you know, by the hour. And then you say, okay, well, just communicate with me via email or text. And he doesn't honor that. And when he sees you at a, like, say the kids are doing some type of sporting event or whatever, and you attend and he attends, and he comes over and he starts pounding on you about what he wants in front of everyone else. Is there any remedy to stop that? Can you get a restraining order or something to stop that?
You can. I mean, if it's harassing conduct can be dealt with by a restraining order if it reaches that point. There are a number of things that can be done, though, before it gets to that point. There's a thing called Our Family Wizard, which is set up online, and a lot of judges will order the parties to use it for communication where there are problems, like you've just described. And it creates a documentation that can be submitted to the court to show the court exactly the extent of what's going on. And it's a program that you can download and you can both use. I also provide specific guidance for how to handle narcissists and bullies during divorce in the book, because this does come up a lot. And, you know, these people put their own interests ahead of yours at all costs, even if it harms the children. So what you describe where they come up to you in public at your son's Little League game or the dance team competition, you know, and start haranguing you, it does happen with complete disregard for how that's going to impact the children. Mm-hmm. And the only way to deal with these people is to set firm boundaries. Now, most people believe that setting boundaries means being confrontational and assertive, but that doesn't work with a narcissist or a bully. The more you confront and assert your position, the more you play into their game. So when setting boundaries, you need to refuse to communicate unless it can be done in a manner free of conflict, manipulation, and disrespect. And you may need to insist that all communication be through a program like Our Family Wizard. Okay. And you can just let it be known that you will not respond to any communication that dismisses or belittles you and your needs.
Okay. Now, is this Our Family Wizard an app that they can download? Or
I think it's an app, and it's also online, and it's downloadable. And as I said, judges will often order the parties to use it where there is some. It comes up pretty often where people feel like they're being abused through the texts. Uh-huh. They're getting texted all constantly, and it's abusive. So it can be used in that situation.
Okay, so there is remedy. So in a way, some social media can be helpful to us, but what has the effect of Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and whatever out there, how has that impacted divorce? Has it created more saved marriages so there are less? What's going on with social media and relationships in there?
It's interesting. Recent studies reveal that Facebook and Twitter users have a higher rate of infidelity and divorce. There are 40 million sexually explicit websites, chat rooms, bulletin boards, and interactive games available on the Internet.
40 million?
40 million. And an estimated 20 to 33% of Internet users go online for sexual purposes. Most are male, about 35 years old, married with children, and well-educated. Online sexual behavior is proving to be highly addictive to some users, and serious relationship problems are reported in almost all marriages in which one partner is cybersex addicted.
Wow.
And I have a number of cases now where this is the case, and it's just tragic when that happens. It's a very real issue, and it's landing more and more people in my office. And I alluded to that at the beginning of our interview when I said, seems like this is sort of a perfect storm for this divorce epidemic that we're experiencing. And I think a lot of it has to do with electronics and social media.
Wow. I mean, that's astounding. 40 million. I'm still stuck back there. It's just
Yeah. It's quite something.
Yes, wow. That's astounding. I mean, that just blew me away, that number. I mean, wow. It just blew me away. Okay. So, is there anything else that you feel that a woman really needs to know to protect herself?
Well, what I want women to know, and what I really want them to take away, is that divorce is not the end. It's the opportunity for a new beginning. The truth is, you don't have to stay married and miserable. If you follow the tips in the book, and it includes lots of insider tips, things that the divorce professionals within the business and probably even your spouse doesn't want you to know, it is the roadmap for you to take back your power and create the life you want.
There you go, Taking Care of the Power. And her book is very empowering, people. And it's called The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot, What Every Woman Needs to Know About Finances, Child Custodies, Lawyers, and Planning Ahead. And again, we have been speaking, because we're going to end our show with Anne E. Grant, JD. You can check her out at thedivorcehacker.com, or you can check her out at annegrantlaw.com. She's practicing out of Manhattan Beach, California, so you know she's quite knowledgeable in California law. And if you're listening outside of California and you have a few questions or whatever, she can possibly direct you to where you need to go. But in any case, whether you live in California or not, get the book, because I think the basic premise of her book covers, you know, all types of states, you know, no matter what type you live in. So, Anne, I want to thank you for being with me today as we collectively get over it and get on with divorce if we need one.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, you're welcome. And to the guest, we appreciate you, and I'm honored by your time and attention. If you're looking to live a more balanced life, you can give me a call for a 30-minute or longer consultation, and they're offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. And that number to call is 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of love. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.